Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 385th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
And I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and a professor at the University of Alberta.
And for those of you who were listening to our last podcast, we are going to continue our conversation with Tim Caulfield, who is with the Faculty of Law at the University of Alberta, where he basically looks into a variety of different areas and tries to, debunk a lot of things that are going on. In our last podcast, we talked about genetic testing and where all, how that has all been overblown. And I think we're going to get, not more serious, but another important area we're going to talk about. And we're going to talk about some stuff to do with unproven stem cell therapies. And Tim, why don't you just introduce yourself again for our listeners?
Sure. I'm a Canada Research Chair in Health Law and Policy in the Faculty of Law in the School of Public Health. And I've done research, sort of interdisciplinary research, on these kinds of issues. You know, what does the science, what does the evidence say about a particular policy, about an emerging area of science? And increasingly, we're looking at how it's represented in the public sphere and whether those representations can be sort of justified by the science.
Yeah, and I know a lot of the stuff that you do, and I've done a little bit of the stuff with you, is looking at what is literally said in the public forum, if you will. I mean, your book, is Gwyneth Paltrow wrong about everything? And it's really that sort of area that you sort of delve into, because, I mean, whether we like it or not, that is where a ton of people get their knowledge about science and medicine.
Yeah, you're right. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, our team decided to look at this aspect of the story. Mm-hmm. It's incredible the influence that the popular culture has on health behavior. And, you know, and it's interesting because it affects all of us. Mm-hmm. I think people think, well, it just affects my crazy neighbor. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the research, it really does influence all of us. And you can even map kind of utilization rates according to how something is portrayed in the popular press. So, you know, this stuff matters, right?
Yeah. And it's also, it also creates a lot of pressure on our healthcare system, because Mike, you know, I'm sure you've had to have these conversations where people come in and say, I heard about this in the press. You know, can you tell me about it? And hopefully, you might know a little bit about it, but often it'll be, I've never heard of that at all.
Yeah, a lot of it is completely out of left field.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done some work on that, James, when we looked at the televised medical talk shows and tried to figure out what was being said in those and that kind of thing. But that's still, even that was just scratching the surface of this. And Tim does a lot more work with looking at what the media reports, and there's so much misinformation out there. And you know, as you said, that's where, unfortunately, a lot of people get the majority of their health information from internet sources, particularly things like Gwyneth Paltrow's blog or have you. And it is deeply concerning and unfixable almost. I'd be interested to hear from Tim at not this podcast per se, but on another one about how, if there is a way out from that. But it's a fascinatingly difficult problem.
Yeah, and we actually don't want it to be fixed, because if it did, then we wouldn't have the jobs we have.
Well, you know, to be fair, that's what drew Tim into this work, is he could see that you and I were doing such a poor job debunking these myths that there was a need.
Always fix things, right?
Because his new book is why are Mike and James wrong about everything. But anyway, let's get back into the whole stem cell discussion, because it's really, really important. And I know you've had a deep dive into much of this stuff, especially what's in the press.
Yeah, that's right, and I think it plays really nicely what we were just talking about, because, you know, this is a really good example of how difficult it's becoming to fight this stuff, right? Because it's often tied up in real science, right? And so it seems legitimate. It seems like a legitimate treatment option, right? Yeah. When in fact, it's not. So what we've looked at is what's becoming a really problematic phenomenon. And this is the marketing of unproven stem cell therapies. And it's something that we've looked at for, you know, a long time, really, since we, I think we first started looking at this in about 2006. And this is a problem that's just accelerated, right? So let me give you a sense of what's going on. I'll sort of walk you through what the problem is. And I want to emphasize, this is really becoming an international issue. You have the FDA in the United States grappling with it. You have Health Canada grappling with it. You have international entities like the International Society for Stem Cell Research dealing with it. So this is a big problem. And what's going on is you have the concept of stem cell research being sort of co-opted by clinics to sell, you know, I call it bunk, but unproven therapies. And look, stem cell research, again, really exciting area of inquiry. There's really great work going on, even here in Canada, but it's still early days. It's still early days. But what's happening is people, you know, in the popular press, I call it science exploitation. They take those concepts and they start to sell nonsense. So you've seen like these stem cell facial creams, you see stem cell anti-aging therapies, you can see things like stem cell weight loss therapies, all of course complete nonsense. But on the more serious side of things, you're starting to see the marketing of unproven stem cell therapies for really serious stuff like MS, ALS, heart disease, cancer. We did a study in 2010 when we asked the stem cell research community, what is the biggest issue that you're dealing with from a social perspective? And you think this is a research community that's dealt with embryonic stem cell research, cloning, right? The buying and selling of eggs. So they've dealt with a lot of controversy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they picked the marketing of unproven stem cell research as the biggest issue, right? So, I mean, that says a lot, right? That says a lot. So what is the issue? Let's get down to sort of specifics here. If you're a patient and you have a serious illness, and or perhaps your child has a serious illness, and you go online and you Google stem cell therapy, you are going to be led to these clinics that exist all over the world that are offering stem cell treatments for autism, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, cancer, eye disease, HIV, AIDS, liver disease. You name it, right? There is a stem cell treatment for everything. These clinics look entirely legitimate. They have very impressive websites. They'll often refer to science and clinical trials. But by and large, this is unproven stuff. Now, we did a study in 2008, I think it was one of the very first ones, where we tried to map out what's being offered and what the evidence says about what's being offered. And no surprise, the claims were not supported by the existing evidence. We redid that study in 2013. Same results. In fact, it's gotten worse. So there's a lot of unproven therapies out there that are being marketed both nationally and internationally. I think it's important to get a sense of what the state of the science actually is. So if you look at sort of the international entities like the International Society for Stem Cell Research, the Stem Cell Network here in Canada, you know, Stem Cell Australia, these are all entities that want stem cell research to work, right? So they're not against it. And if you go to their websites and you see their statements about where the science is, you know, what therapies are ready for the clinic, that list is super short, right? You're talking about, you know, using stem cells to treat very particular kinds of cancer, and that's been around, we're talking cord blood, right? That's been around for a long time. You have a restricted use for some burns, you know, helping with skin grafting and some eye treatments, but really restricted. We're not talking about very many treatments. But despite that, you have all of these clinics all over the world offering services. And this is a big issue. I mean, look at some of the clinics in China, for example. They have tens of thousands of patients. One clinic called the Beike Biotech is, you know, over 60,000 patients. M-Cell, which is a well-known one in Ukraine, over 8,000. So we're talking about a lot of patients. Now, the other interesting thing important to note now is these clinics are starting to emerge in North America, right? Here in Canada and in the United States. There was a study that was done by friends of mine, Lee Turner and Paul Knopfler, in the U.S., and they found almost 600 of these clinics in the U.S., and now we're starting to see them emerge in Canada too. Now, a lot of these clinics are focused on orthopedic stuff and pain, but still, even in that, for those indications, the evidence isn't really strong at all, right? You know, interesting research going on, interesting clinical trials. But if you look at the systematic reviews, and many of them have been done very recently, they suggest the evidence is not there for using stem cell research for these sort of orthopedic sports-related injuries.
So, you're telling me that a stem cell treatment will not just replace my hip?
No, it won't, right?
Wow.
But you think of the clinics that are offering that now. There are a lot of them, right? There are a lot of them here in Canada. There was a systematic review that was published in 2017 in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. It said that, you know, it's stem cell research is not recommended for tendon injuries, which is very common, right? Think of all the athletes, right, that use it in that context. It's also not recommended for osteoarthritis, right? So of the knee, and these are two very common indications, these are populations where these clinics are marketing. The evidence isn't there, and there's harm associated with it. These, you know, people have lost their eyesight as a result of getting these treatments. Tumors have grown as a result of getting these treatments. There have been deaths associated with the administration of these treatments. So these are serious issues.
Yeah.
Financial issues.
And I was just going to say, when you say there is no evidence, now sometimes there is evidence that it doesn't do anything, right? It's not that it's not being studied.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's important because you often hear that, right? Well, we don't have enough evidence. There's as you can imagine, there's a lot of research going on in this space. But for a lot of the indications I've just talked about, it's often the quality of the study that's problematic. So it'll look like there's research happening, but it's not. It's some open label trial that's done in a private clinic, right?
Right.
Really compelling evidence as opposed to, you know, a good clinical trial. And also for a lot of these indications, you know, the scientific community would say that the science isn't there yet, right? We haven't got to the point where we have, you know, a good sense of what's happening biologically before we should be really offering it to patients. But once again, you guys, I have this huge caveat. I'm hopeful, right? This is an exciting area of research. The other thing I think is important to highlight here when we're talking about does it work is you will see these studies that suggest, you know, lessening of pain or something like that. Well, it's unclear what's happening. Is it a placebo effect? Is it an anti-inflammatory effect? You know, those are open to question. But I think it's clear it's not having a regenerative effect, right? And that's often the problem that's associated with stem cells.
So, Tim, can I just interrupt right now? What I was hoping from stem cells is they might help me grow wings or something really cool. How's that coming along? Where are we in that front?
No wings, you know, no new heads, no new arms.
Yeah, maybe something smarter.
But you know, that sounds like a ridiculous question, but it's not, because that's, again, how it's portrayed in popular culture, right? Whether you're talking about on movies or whether you're just talking about it in the fake news, right? That's how it's portrayed.
Absolutely. No, and we see, I just was reviewing something on PRP, which isn't by any stretch the same thing, but this platelet-rich plasma injections for osteoarthritis. And I was struck by one of the authors had actually broken them down into low, medium, and high-quality trials. In low-quality trials, the standard mean difference, and you'll know this, James, was 13.
Mm.
13. So that's astronomical. That would be some of the most impressive interventions that you could ever dream of. The moderate quality trials were 1.3, which is still pretty impressive. And the high quality trials, 0.09.
Wow.
So it's just this perfect, you were saying about quality of the trials, quality of the studies. It shows how important in PRP. So if you looked at all trials overall, you would think, wow, this stuff really does seem to work. Mm-hmm. If you focused on good quality research, you would say there's no hope in hell this stuff works.
Yeah. And I think it's so important when we talk about, you know, when you hear the word there's no evidence, you know, what that actually means. I mean, there often literally is no evidence, period. It's not even being studied. But often, many of these things have been, in quotation marks, studied. And then that's where it comes into, we have to look and see what was going to be, you know, what was the evidence that was done, and how do you sort of look into it, look for biases and confounding and all that sort of stuff. So it's always important to put it into context, because you can always find a study that will often support what you're saying. And that is part of the problem with this entire stem cell stuff and any other sort of treatments that sound better than they really are. And I think you talked a little bit about harm. I don't know if you're going to talk about that now or, but there is a, it's not that these, you know, if there was absolutely no harm and no cost, we probably wouldn't care that much, but there is harm associated with these things.
There really, you know, there is harm. You know, there's physical harm, as I, as I pointed out, but there's, you know, there's also financial harm. This stuff isn't cheap, right? If you're going to go to a clinic overseas, you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars, and it quickly becomes hundreds of thousands of dollars. And these local clinics, you're looking at thousands for sure. You know, often tens of thousands also. So, you know, it's not cheap. And you know, going back to, you know, the what does the evidence say? Keep in mind, these clinics are not in general advertising this as experimental. They're not advertising it as a something that's signaling towards efficacy. They're representing this as a treatment option that works, right? So, you know, as a policy person, you know, I can say definitively that the science is not there, right? You know, I make an argument that this is an interesting experimental treatment that we should try, but is it something that should be marketed as efficacious? The answer is no. And that's often how it's represented in the public sphere.
And so, we'll keep going, Tim, because there's still lots more stuff to sort of to talk about.
Yeah, I think the other, question I often get is, you know, how do we get here, right? How do you know what created all of this noise? And it is a fact, you know, the stem cell story is fascinating, right? Because it started in the late 90s, and there was a whole bunch of excitement associated with it. Also, a whole bunch of controversy, right? Because they were doing research on human embryos. So it came out of the gate, right, in the late 90s with this polarized discourse of miracle cures versus horrific ethical problems, right? So right from the start, there was a whole bunch of hyperbole around stem cells. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing so much noise now, because these clinics are leveraging that kind of hype, right? The phrase stem cells, I think, in pop culture now is code for cutting edge, right? And and so you see headlines, you know, we've done a lot of research on how this is portrayed. We have athletes going, getting this treatment all over the world. You have early stage stem cell clinical trials portrayed as if it's indicating that this stuff is efficacious. And the clinics can use this, right, to market their products. There's also, you know, pop culture loves this, right? You know, the example I like to use is Mel Gibson talking about his dad on the Joe Rogan show. So this is a very popular podcast done by a comedian. Mel Gibson is there talking about his dad going to a stem cell clinic in South America. And he's saying that his dad got this stem cell injection. And you guys, as I recall, he was basically just given stem cells by IV into his arm, right? So somehow the stem cells know exactly where to go in the body to fix the body. As a result of the stem cells, Mel Gibson tells the world that his dad has a new lease on life. It fixed all of his inflammation. He started walking again. His kidneys are good. His prolapsed valve is healed. He has improved cognitive powers. I'm quoting Mel Gibson, by the way. So I'm not going to do an impersonation of him. and even his, you know, he jokes that even his dad's private parts are working better now. Imagine talking about your kid that way on, your dad that way on the radio. Yeah, so this is the kind of stuff that's out there, and that becomes really believable. We've also seen that the popular press represents these clinics in a very, very favorable, almost without exception. We did a study of thousands of papers, newspaper articles, and then we've found that it's almost always portrayed in a very positive light. And a very good example of that is the Gordie Howe story. Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Howe went to Mexico to get a stem cell treatment for a stroke that he had. And, it, you know, it was very questionable what was going on. Like, you know, is this treatment efficacious? Very questionable. But in the popular press, it was portrayed as if it works. And we did a study looking at how the popular press represented this. And one thing we found interesting is a dominant theme is, why isn't this available in Canada?
Yeah.
The theme wasn't, this stuff doesn't work. The science isn't there. The theme was, why isn't this available in Canada? And when the public hears that, you know, it makes it sound like this stuff works, and it really allows these clinics to thrive.
Yeah, and just so people know, Gordie Howe's dead.
Yeah, so Gordie Howe died. Right?
Yeah, it didn't work really well.
No, it didn't. It didn't work, and it probably didn't work at all.
Yeah, right?
So the thing that people should know who aren't Canadians I would say 99.9% of our Canadian listeners will go, well, the name Gordie Howe resonates with them. But for those outside of Canada, he is a hockey legend. And because I use the word hockey, that means Canada. So that's, or apparently that's why
you're not following who wins the Stanley Cup.
Well, it means, even though it means Canada to us, it doesn't mean we're any good at building Canadian teams that could win the cup.
Yeah.
It is remarkable, I tell that story about Gordie Howe around the world and no one knows who he is.
Yeah.
Like, but why would everyone write Canadian. A story
about this guy?
Yeah. But it's an important, it's basically taking, people who are well known, if you will. And, the tricky part about all of these things is, all of these conditions that people can go get, stem cell treatment, all of these conditions fluctuate. And so you will always have anecdotes of people who get better. The problem is no one markets the people who didn't get better. And so you get a very distorted view, just as you've talked about, Tim.
Yeah, you're right. And there's so much of this in the popular press now about stem cells. We did, I call it implicit hype, right? Mm. So what stem cells has gotten to the point where people don't even talk about it in any detail. So if there's a sports star that, by people, I mean, the reporters don't really talk about it in detail, right? So there's a sports star that, went to one of these clinics to get treated, get their hamstring or back treated. Mm-hmm. The reporter will just say, this famous athlete went to the clinic to get stem cell treatment on his or her back, right? And that, the message to the public is, rich celebrity sports star got cutting edge stem cell treatment that works, right?
No, exactly.
And that really is, a powerful motivator for people to go to these clinics.
And I think it's a powerful motivator to also go, okay, if as a person I spend $50,000 on something, you're much less likely to go, well, what an idiot I was. It didn't do anything. You're almost guaranteeing that that there's going to be a benefit, and you're going to be looking for any sign of benefit, and then you'll mention it. Otherwise, you got to go, I was an idiot. I just spent.
You're right. And there's, as you guys know, there's studies to back that up, right? The more expensive a placebo is, the better it works.
Yeah. So
yeah, absolutely.
This is one of the most expensive placebos I've heard of. Like
it is very expensive. It really is. And Mike, we did a study on PRP, on how platelet-rich plasma is represented in the public sphere. And what we found is almost all the stories are sports stories. No surprise, right?
Yeah.
And it's portrayed as routine. And we found that if it's a sports story, only 5% of those stories will say this is an experimental treatment, which is the right answer, right? That's the right answer. And only 5% of them have that. So, if you're the general public and you're reading, your morning paper and you're hearing about some athlete getting PRP, it seems more plausible, right? Yeah. It seems like it might be an effective treatment.
Well, it seems, and I know this is the word you use, it's science-y. Or, Mike, there's another word that you were talking about.
Science exploitation,
Yes, science exploitation. But it's fascinating to me how easy it is to captivate the public mind on these kind of things, and how poor James and I are at doing that.
Yes, I know.
That's not true.
Well, there's no evidence that we benefit anyone. But there you go. It's all anecdotal. But
from you.
Yeah. But anyway, so keep leading us down this path, because I think there's still even more stuff around stem cells.
There are, and you do see these stories all the time. I don't know if you saw the Jack Nicklaus secret stem cell therapy story that was in CNN, right? That's a really good example.
Right.
It was on CNN, written by Sanjay Gupta, and it sounded like it was real, right? So you hear those kinds of stories, and it helps drive this industry. But the other thing that's happening now, particularly in the realm of stem cells, these clinics are starting to use things like clinicaltrials.gov. And for your listeners, this is where you register your clinical trial if you're doing research, right? And it's run by the NIH. And so what they do is they claim that they're doing some kind of trial. They register it, and then they put that on their website, and it makes it seem more real. We call these tokens of legitimacy. Or what they'll do is they'll refer to a study that was published in a predatory journal, like a less than reputable journal. again, it becomes very, very difficult to get a sense of what's real and what's not real. And so I guess really the bottom line is be skeptical. You know, if you see a clinic claiming that they have a stem cell therapy for a treatment, be skeptical, because right now there are very few that actually have enough evidence to justify their clinical use.
And Tim, maybe just quickly let people know what, I mean, I know what it is, but what a predatory publisher or a predatory journal or science journal is, because it actually is really, it's mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a great topic for a podcast for you guys, because this has become a significant issue in the academic, in the research world. So predatory journals are these journals that are popping up all over the world. They're generally open access, and you have to pay to publish. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the journal's not reputable, because that's increasingly becoming the business model. But what these publications have very questionable peer review. They have questionable editorial boards. In fact, there's one funny story about a dog from Australia that got on the editorial board of seven of these journals. Like a dog named Ollie is on seven of these editorial boards.
But so they're very by all accounts, does really a hell of a good job of editing. And
I understand he's a very smart dog. He wears glasses. You can get a picture of him. And he looks very smart.
And I don't know, Mike, we must all get this, because I must get at least 8 or 9 emails a day telling me how wonderful I am, telling me all of the articles that I published would be so relevant, and can you please publish in my journal? I mean,
I don't know. And James, thanks for bringing that up. If you're getting them.
I know.
How low was the bar, right?
Exactly. And again, very inappropriate, guys, but pick on the old guy.
Yeah, we all get them. It's pretty outstanding. And even I know you get them too, as invites to go speak somewhere.
Oh yeah.
And all of those kind of things. None of them would pan out to be anything if you actually pursued them. Mm-hmm. But you're supposed to register and blah blah blah. It's fascinating. And some of these have real, like, they have real websites and there's articles on there, mm-hmm. but God knows what kind of actual research is. And I feel bad for people. Undoubtedly, some honest researchers are trying to get their stuff published and think, oh, great, here we go.
Yeah, much easier.
Yeah, and then submit it, get it online, and realize afterwards that they've published with a journal without any solid reputation or even a negative reputation. It's difficult then. How do you then take that research that's in there and put it somewhere useful? So, you know, it's more than just the getting scammed for people like you and I, James. It's actually, you know, I feel bad for people who have actually fallen prey for it.
Yeah, because it obviously happens. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Now, I'm sure, as with all new therapies, there's also evidence that it really improves sex life. Isn't that true, Tim?
That's right. That's right. And this is a good example of a predatory journal at play. Because what these clinics will do is they will publish their work in a predatory journal, and then use that publication to justify their practice. And this is one of my favorite examples. Jen Gunter, who is a gynecologist in California, she's a good friend of mine. She's also a great debunker, you know, science warrior. We got in an argument with a guy named Charles Runnell, who is a physician in Florida, who's offering a service called the O-Shot. And if you're not familiar with the O-Shot, what it is a PRP injection directly into vaginal tissue. And he calls it a stem cell injection. And you're supposed to do this to improve your sex life, improve your orgasms. And of course, there's no evidence to support that. Well, Jen and I get in an argument with this guy online on Twitter. And in order to support his claims, he sends Jen and I this study, right? And this study was published in what looks like, you know, at first blush, to be a reputable publication. But then if you look at the methods, it was an open label, you know, open trial of 11 females, right? Is that even a study? I don't know. It was published in what turns out to probably be a predatory journal. And then if you look at where this guy, Charles Runnell, exists, that he, you know, because he's the corresponding author, you can use Google Maps to find out exactly where his university is located, and it looks like it's a dumpster, right? So this is not a reputable publication, or a reputable service. There's, in fact, no evidence to support the OSHA at all. But despite that, you guys, the OSHA now is offered all over the world. In fact, there are clinics here in Edmonton. I found numerous clinics in Edmonton offering the OSHA. And again, no evidence to support it. But some of these clinics say, you know, that you will see an improvement in 2 to 4 weeks. This is entirely safe. And results might last. I'm actually quoting here from a particular website. The results might last for several years and possibly indefinitely, right? So this is the kind of thing that happens, and it's all built on the back of the hype around stem cells, you know, the use of predatory journals, and the desire to market nonsense.
And so, you know, given that there's so many issues around it, like, what are we supposed to do with all this stuff? I'm sure there's very few treatments or the stem cell treatments that are really ready for prime time in any way, shape, or form, even though there's dozens of, not more than, you know, thousands of clinics out there. So what are we supposed to be doing now?
Well, you know, I think clinicians, like your people that are dealing with patients, I think they should be immediately skeptical if their patients are going to these clinics. But what they should do is they should point them to reputable sources of information. The International Society for Stem Cell Research has got a great website for patients, patient handbook, A Closer Look at Stem Cells, it's called. It's a terrific resource. Stem Cell Network in Canada also has a good resource. It basically gives the bottom line on where stem cell research really is. That's what, you know, clinicians can do with their patients. But I also think we need to have, you know, the research community be careful about how they talk about stem cells. You know, don't hype it up, but also get involved in debunking what's being said in the popular here. And the ISSCR has recommended that the entire stem cell research community do exactly that. I also think we need better regulation. I think Health Canada, this is on their agenda now. FDA, it's on FDA's agenda. In fact, there has been a big lawsuit run by the FDA against two huge stem cell clinic networks in the United States. So that is a fantastic move. That's a fantastic move. And I'd like to see more of that here in Canada. And there's also been suggestions, you know, coming from places like California, that we need regulations about how this stuff is marketed, suggesting that if you are going to market this stuff in your clinic, you've got to say that what the science is, you've got to say it's not FDA approved. I think that they already have that obligation, but it's nice that regulators are thinking that way. And in Australia, they've suggested that you shouldn't be able to market it at all, like that you shouldn't be able to put this on your website. You know, clinics shouldn't be able to market this. It should be like direct to consumer advertising. Pharmaceuticals shouldn't be allowed in certain contexts. So there is some regulatory action that's happening. That's fantastic. But right now, it's still a mess out there. So, you know, people, both patients and clinicians, need to be skeptical.
Yeah. And I think it's important to realize that, you know, certainly there are unethical people doing this for sure. But it's also, you know, some people even, you know, truly believe it works. And I find, at least for doing this for years and years and years, is that, you know, many, many healthcare providers really don't understand how to look at evidence. They don't realize that not every study proves cause and effect and all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure you'd agree with that, Mike. It's something that we're trying to promote, you know, right from the get-go, that in medicine and science, that, you know, we people need to understand what we do know or how we figure out if things work or not. And it's not easy. I mean, it's taken us years and years to get better at doing this. And I, you know, we're still miles away from perfect, but it's almost a, just because you're a specialist doesn't make you better at looking at research. If I think you'd agree with that, eh, Mike?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I get requests a fair amount. I'm sure all of us on this podcast do, about, can you come and give us a talk for 45 minutes on how to identify myths in medicine, or how to research a clinical question or what have you? And, you know, these issues, that skill set, even if I have it, which some would say I don't, it takes years and years and years to develop, and you get fooled a number of times by certain claims and all sorts of things. And so it's not an easy task to learn to do, and you have to maintain it all the time to stay up to date. And so you're right, James, it's not easy to figure these things out. And I'm impressed in this case. Most of the time when we kind of look into myths, there's very little to substantiate them. In the case that Tim described, where they were, you know, publishing in a predatory journal, took the time to write an article and pay, and, you know, put themselves on clinical trials and all of that, these people are putting in the effort. Like, it's good for them, even if it's a deception. Good for them, because most of the time we always say, you know, this is the BS paradox. It takes 1/10 of the time to create BS as it does to refute it. But these people are putting in the effort to try and really work hard to create good BS.
Yeah.
And it's going to get, because of that, it's going to get more and more difficult to tease this out. Because, you know, I am optimistic about stem cell research, actually. And I think that there are things that are going to move closer to the clinic. And that's just going to make it more difficult, right? You know, to get to separate the baloney from the stuff that really is promising. And people are going to use that confusion, right, in order to sell therapies that aren't ready for the clinic.
Yeah, and there's no way we can expect your average healthcare provider to do what we do. And I think one of the reasons we bring people like Tim onto the show and Mike and I do these podcasts is that as a healthcare provider, you have to sort of hopefully identify people that you can trust, that the people who are telling you these things, you know, they've spent a lot of time looking in detail about this. And I can honestly say, I mean, from your perspective, Tim, and I'm sure from Mike and I, we wish this stuff worked. It's not that we... It's, you know, yeah. I'll be honest. Sometimes I do get a kick out of yet another study. I go, well, there it is, another study showing that what we're saying is correct. I mean, we're human as well. We're not immune to that sort of stuff. But in general, we really wish it would work. And
I agree with you. You know, I've invested a lot of my career in stem cell research. I want it to work. Right, I'm excited about it. And there's this belief often that there's even a conspiracy theory that somehow I'm paid by Big Pharma. I'm sure you guys hear this one all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Big Pharma doesn't want stem cells to work because then they're going to lose money, right?
Yeah.
So you hear that all the time. But no, all the researchers, you know, I've got to work with some of the great Canadian stem cell researchers. They want this stuff to work, and they're dedicated their lives to making it work. But it's just not there. Hey, science is hard, right? Science is hard.
You heard it here first. It took us 385 podcasts, but finally we've come to the truth. Science is difficult. And so I don't think you had to say anything else other than that, Tim.
No, that's a good closer, right?
Yeah, we could have cut out the whole other the other hour of us discussing these. So just, you know, it's tricky. Yeah. But no, thanks, Tim. This has been great stuff. And like I said, we're big fans of what you do. And we really appreciate the science that you put into doing this. It's not like you've said, you're not purposely just trying to, you know, tell people that nothing works. It just becomes very obvious that a lot of things don't work when you look at, you know, when you sort of dig underneath the very soft, thin surface of what people are telling you. And, you know, we need people like yourselves to you know, hold the people's fingers, or whatever the thing is, to the flame or fire, or whatever that expression is. I have no idea what it is anymore. But we really appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking to us. And we'll put links to much of what you've been talking about. We'll put links to your books and all that sort of stuff. We're not trying to promote them. We don't make any money on it. It's not an advertisement. But a lot of your writings are really useful and very academic, if you will. And that's why we brought you onto the show. So anything else you want to add, Tim?
No, thanks very much. And obviously, I'm big fans of what you guys do, and keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thanks. So I think we'll leave it at that. So thanks, as always, for listening.
Talk to you later.